Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome.
I'm Megan.
I'm Hannah.
And today we are covering the case of Todd and Amy Mullis. And for this one, I watched 48 Hours, The Corn Rake Murder, listened to Court Junkie podcast, and I read the Todd Mullis criminal complaint.
48 Hours used to give me the weirdest dreams.
Really?
Yeah, because the first, I can't remember what it came on after, but it was like CSI Miami or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And it was, I watched it all the time when I was younger, and whatever it was, 48 Hours came on after, and I'd fall asleep, and it would give me the weirdest freaking dreams every time.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, because you know a lot of times I have to, like, cut it off at a certain time of the night, because if I watch too close to bed,
you're going
to
have the same problem.
In. Yep. Yeah, so.
Somehow.
I get it. On November 10th of 2018, Amy Mullis was severely injured on her family farm in Earlville, Iowa. This is a very small community, farm town, where everybody knows everybody. She was found by her 13-year-old son, Tristan, in a red shed on the family's hog farm. She was face down, with a corn rake sticking out of her back. And for those of you who aren't familiar with a corn rake, it is really similar to a pitchfork. The corn rake has four sharp metal prongs or tines that curl away from the handle, and it's used to scoop the corn without having to twist or turn the handle.
Oh, okay.
In this case, the question is murder or accident? The only people that we know that were at the farm that day were her husband, Todd, and their children. And Todd had an alibi, their 13-year-old son.
The one that found her.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Todd Mullis was a hard worker who was always passionate about farming. He purchased his first farm in 1999, and in 2003, he met Amy at the Delaware County Fair, and they got married the following year in 2004, and then Amy moved to Todd's farm, and they later had three children.
That is such a small town thing to meet somebody at the county fair.
I know.
That's amazing.
I thought the same thing. Todd was a straight shooter, hard worker, tough man type. Amy was bubbly and outgoing. She seemed to love the farm life, but she also wanted to do things outside of the farm. And she often complained that Todd just worked too much. She wanted to go out and do things, and he wasn't really interested in that.
Okay, I feel like that kind of comes with farming territory, though.
And I'm sure
that... You spend a lot of time doing that.
Yes, it takes up so much time, and you're working hard labor all day. Do you really want to go out after? You know, I can understand that.
I hardly have the energy when I get off work.
Around 2013, Amy had an affair with another man, and once Todd found out, the two of them decided that they were going to work on things. They wanted to save their marriage if possible. So they went to marriage counseling, and Amy quit her job at Regional Medical Center to work on the farm. Todd said she wanted to spend more time with the family, but Amy had a different story when it came to this. She told her friends that she had no choice in the matter. Like, she was
like
forced
to quit.
Like,
he was making her because of her cheating?
Yes, okay. Exactly. So basically, she made a deal with Todd that she would quit her job and work on the farm, but she said that it made her feel like a prisoner.
Well, that's a big freaking jump from going... from nursing stuff to secluded on a farm.
Right, yes, not leaving your home to go to work anymore. Todd gave her an approved friend list of people that she could hang out with, her outings were timed.
This is why it doesn't typically work out if somebody cheats.
It can, but yes.
It is very rare.
It's hard.
Because this is the trust thing, once that's broken, man. It's hard.
Now, from what I'm, you know, what I read in the sources is this idea actually came from their marriage counselor.
Wow.
To which I'm not a counselor. However, this is problematic.
Don't think that was the best advice. Yeah.
To teach them or him to be more controlling of somebody. I don't really think that's how we get the marriage back on track, but what do I know?
Right.
Maybe. So yeah, the marriage counselor told Amy that she needed to be more accountable for her infidelity and always tell Todd where she was going.
Okay.
I know.
It's just weird.
Are we sure here? Like, it just feels wrong, but maybe. Maybe there's something behind it that I'm just not understanding.
Nah, I don't think so.
It doesn't sound right to me.
I don't think so.
But again, I don't have the credentials, so I'm not sure. But Amy was confiding in her friends and told them that she was not happy in her marriage, and she hadn't been happy for years. According to Amy's stepmother, when they decided to work on their marriage, Todd told her, quote, "I'm not going to lose my farm and what I've worked for," which is kind of an interesting thing because this is going to come up a lot, kind of this same kind of quote. And to me, it's not saying like, I want to work on the marriage. It's I don't want to lose my farm.
Because that's what he's worked the hardest for to build.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it almost seems like the priorities aren't correct, but okay. In 2016, Todd and Amy acquired more land, and so they were going to build a cabin on it. Todd said that Amy was happy, and he encouraged her to start hanging out with her friends again, and he wanted her to take the kids on trips to visit the family. After they started counseling, and up until the summer of 2018, Todd said that he was not concerned about their marriage any longer, and he thought that things were good. They had fixed it. In July of 2018, 5 years after the affair, Todd noticed that Amy's behavior was different. It reminded him of when she had an affair, so he was suspicious right away. He went through her phone records and discovered she had been talking to another man, Jerry Frazier, and he was a field manager for the Mullis Farm. So it wouldn't actually be abnormal for the two of them to be communicating.
Okay.
But there were 128 texts in one day between the two of them.
Whoa, who the fuck has the time for that?
I don't even have 128 texts in a month, okay?
Isaac is lucky if he gets like 5 messages from me in a day.
Like for real.
I do not have the freaking time for that.
No.
Oh, that is insane.
It's a very stressful amount, honestly. Like, I could not handle this.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that I've ever been employed with, I would say like 5-10 messages, absolute max, just throwing that out there.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, if I'm having a conversation with a friend, it would have to be a really deep conversation.
5-10 texts, yeah. Absolute max.
And that's like, that's a lot.
Listen, I love y'all. I'm just freaking terrible with it. Yeah. I really am.
Like, I'm going to send you probably a novel and then that's it.
Yeah. No, I'll reply for a couple of them and then I'm falling off and getting distracted. So
yeah, I've got things to do. I've got to feed my cats.
Oh my God. Well, there's that.
Yes. So when Todd saw all of these text messages, he thought, okay, I'm going to go confront Jerry about this. And Jerry said, no, there is absolutely nothing going on. He said that the text messages were about work and their kids' activities. Jerry was married and he was a father of 2.
Oh, no.
What?
That's the one she's talking to?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both married.
Yep, they are. Okay. They are both married.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's saying nothing's going on.
Right.
But Todd just could not shake the feeling that something was off. So he called Jerry's wife. And she said the two of them were extremely happy. They did not have any marital problems. And she assured him that Jerry was not having an affair with Amy. Jerry's wife felt that Todd was a little bit crazy. And he did end up calling back a few days later and he said, look, I apologize for even thinking that Jerry was sleeping with my wife. Super sorry. Let's just let it go. Todd did end up sharing his suspicions with Amy's stepmother and Amy's friend Terry as well, which I think is kind of an odd choice, but okay.
It is.
Terry had been hearing Amy's side of things for a really long time, and so she knew that their marriage was in trouble, and she suggested, like, hey, maybe you guys would be better off if you weren't together. And Todd told her, quote, I have worked for this farm since I was 11, and I will not give it up.
Okay.
Right. Again, like, not addressing the marriage situation here. We're just focused on the farm. Now, Earlville is a very small town, and rumors were spreading. By late summer of 2018, Amy started getting worried about being the talk of the town. Her friend Terry heard the rumors of the affair at a work event, and then she told Amy about it. The rumors were true. Amy and Jerry were having an affair. It began, yeah, I know, you're flipping up your hands. I know, you knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really sucks that they were both married.
Of course, and had children.
Like, yeah.
That just adds, you know, that extra element that really bites.
And, like, the fact that his wife was like, oh, we're so happy, all is good.
I bet you she was so freaking embarrassed afterwards.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
which, like, girl, it's not on you.
And, like, thinking that she, like, you knew that all was good. That is just, like, the worst feeling in the world.
And,
it's awful.
Yeah, and sat there and defended him. Like, no, everything's fine. He would never do that.
Yep, been there.
It began in late May of 2018, and Jerry said that they would meet up for sex about once a week, maybe more if they had time.
Jesus, they have a lot of time on their hands right now. Holy cow.
Maybe too much is what I'm thinking here.
Once a week, maybe more, 128 messages in a day.
It's a lot. A lot's happening.
It is.
They were meeting in secret spots on the farm, back roads, and occasionally even motel rooms.
On the farm?
Yeah. It's a large farm.
Oh, that is
but
gross.
Yes, I agree. Amy had strong feelings for Jerry, and she felt like maybe they had a future together. She wanted to marry him, but Jerry wasn't thinking that way. He was just interested in the sex. And he got nervous when Todd confronted him, and he told Amy, okay, maybe we should just slow things down. He didn't want Todd to find out about them, but they didn't slow things down. Amy told her friend that she planned on telling Todd that there was this rumor going around town about an affair, but it was just a rumor, nothing to worry about.
Or imagine this, just let him know, because that's what he probably deserves at this point. Say it, just let it out.
Yeah.
But no, let's just make up a lie. That sounds like a great plan.
I mean, it's a half lie, because there is a rumor going around.
Oh my God, don't justify it.
I'm not. Well, Jerry didn't want this thing to get out either. I mean, he had a wife and children. He did not intend on leaving his family. He wasn't having these feelings like she was.
Sucks to suck.
Yeah. When the rumors were swirling, Amy contacted another former coworker and asked if she had heard about these rumors. And she was like, you know, if you do hear them, could you just shut it down?
She's like, well, now I've heard about them.
Right. From you. Yeah. And that's exactly it. Because she had not.
Whoops.
So Amy mentioned several times that Todd would kill her if he found out. And she said her oldest child told her, quote, if dad finds out you're going to have an affair, he'll kill you. So this is coming from her child. By July, Amy told her friend Terry that she was getting to the point where she felt strong enough to leave on her own, and she was quietly looking for jobs and a place to live. That same month, she told another friend that Todd did not want a divorce because, quote, he would lose half of everything and it is socially unacceptable. On another occasion, she said that she was scared of Todd, and if he found out about her wanting a divorce or having an affair, he would kill her.
Lose half of everything isn't like half the farm.
Yes, there you go.
Which is why he's been saying...
he doesn't want to lose the farm.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was wondering if it was going to be tied in with her somehow like that.
Yeah. In August, Amy's grandma got sick and passed away. So she had the stress of everything going on at home, the rumors swirling around town, and then now she lost her grandma. Amy's brother said that he knew Amy was planning to divorce Todd around this time and expected that he would, quote, flip out. Amy was also worried that her oldest son was going to be angry with her for leaving Todd. She asked her brother to store some of their grandmother's furniture so that she would have some when she finally left Todd. So, I mean, at this point, it sounds like she's getting very close to doing this. In October, Amy's uncle suffered a brain bleed, and she had to go help take care of him. On November 6th of 2018, Amy had an outpatient procedure done. She was getting an ablation to help with the bleeding during her menstrual cycle, and she was told that she was not allowed to lift anything heavy during her recovery. When Todd picked her up from the hospital, the doctor said, make sure she does not lift anything over 10 pounds until she is healed.
Oh my God, I wouldn't even be able to lift Rona Bear.
No.
That's
no
so
cat lifting.
Sad.
I know. So Amy was 39 years old in 2018, and her three children were 13-year-old Tristan, 11-year-old Taylor, and 9-year-old Wyatt. Their oldest son, Tristan, had become very close with his father after Amy had the affair. The two of them began hunting, fishing, four-wheeling, and working on the farm together. On November 10th, the two younger kids were inside the house. Tristan and Todd got up early, and they did some chores. They were checking on some hogs that were off-site, and Amy was making breakfast and waiting at home for them, and then she was also working on a puzzle. A friend texted her that morning to see how she was doing, and she said, quote, thanks, okay, things still very tense around here, just not sure of anything anymore. The ground was frozen outside, so Todd said that they were going to work in the hog barn that day, and Amy was eager to help. She hadn't done much over the last few days after her surgery, and I'm sure she was getting kind of antsy. Todd said that they could work together in the hog barn to get ready for the piglets. The hog barn is about the size of a football field, and they each had their designated jobs. Tristan was setting up portable heaters, and Todd was setting up equipment that provides water to the pens. And then Amy was standing on a 5-gallon bucket, and she was cleaning the lights above. Amy had been experiencing some dizzy spells after her surgery, and they were hitting hard on this day.
And then she had to be in the hog barn of all things. That scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, if you fall in the wrong pen, you're done for.
Yeah, absolutely. That could be a huge problem. Her son, Tristan, said that Amy kept holding herself on the bucket and saying she was dizzy, and when she got down, she was shaky. Tristan and Todd asked her if she needed help, and she said no. Now, according to Tristan, Amy got dizzy again, and they were very concerned for her. This was her first day out of the house since her surgery, and it seemed like she just wasn't ready for this kind of work yet. When she got dizzy again, Todd told her, you know what? It's not wise for you to stay out here. He wanted her to go inside and get some rest, but he asked her to go to the red shed and grab a pet carrier first. He was going to need this later because he was going to be rounding up a litter of kittens to protect them from some heavy machinery that he was going to be using.
Oh,
I mean, I do appreciate
that. At least he was going to save the kittens.
Yes. The pet carrier was in the red shed, which was about 30 yards from the front of the hog barn.
And that's where she was found, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just remembered it because it rhymed.
Okay.
The red shed.
All right. Well, there you go. Thank you. The carrier weighed about 15 pounds and it was up against the wall.
So she wasn't supposed to be lifting it.
Exactly. Because the doctor warned her, don't lift anything over 10 pounds. Todd told her that it would be helpful if she could bring the carrier to the shop, but if she wasn't up to it, just leave it and he would grab it later. So Amy headed out And Tristan said that he and his dad continued working together in the hog barn for about an hour and a half. Then they headed to an office that's at the front. That's when Todd looked out the window and realized the pet carrier was not in the place that he asked Amy to put it.
But it wouldn't necessarily be sus, yeah, right? Because, like, he was kind of like, oh, if you can, you can. If you can't, you can't.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay.
So he asked Tristan to go to the red shed to check on her.
Oh, no.
And that is when he found his mom, face down on her hands and knees, and he saw a corn rake in her back. Tristan checked for a pulse, put his fingers under her nose to see if she was breathing, and he started screaming for his dad. Todd was standing outside the hog building in the farmyard, and he was just a short distance away. When Todd came running over, he told Tristan to go grab the truck. He saw Amy lying in a crouched position just inside the doorway with a corn rake impaled in her back. The door to the red barn was frozen and could not open any wider. So Todd tried to carry Amy through the door, but the rake kept hitting the fertilizer crates.
Oh, my God.
So she wouldn't fit through that narrow opening.
Oh, the thought of the rake hitting things.
It's
awful. Oh, God.
Todd removed the corn rake.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, no.
So that he could carry her out of there.
Okay.
He picked her up and carried her to the truck. Tristan had pulled the truck up and got in the passenger seat, and Todd placed Amy on top of Tristan's lap. Then he proceeded to get in the driver's seat. He called 911 on the way to Manchester Hospital, and that was at 12:01 p.m. The operator asked him to pull over and administer CPR, which he did. Deputy Luke Thompson arrived on the scene and took over CPR and began asking Todd what happened. He said he wasn't sure, but he thought that maybe Amy got dizzy when she was trying to get that pet carrier and she fell on the corn rake. She was rushed to Regional Medical Center, which is the same hospital she previously worked at before the affair and quit her job. When she arrived, she was pronounced dead. The staff was told that it was just this freak accident, and Amy fell on the rake. A medical examiner completed an initial examination of her remains and discovered 6 puncture wounds on her back. The ME also observed Amy's injuries that she had on her chin, cheekbone, knees, and knuckles of each hand. The injury to her chin had both crush and scraping components, but no debris was found in the wound from hitting a surface. The ME asked to see the corn rake, so this was brought in, and that's when everything changed.
Okay.
Amy had 6 puncture wounds.
And there was more or less on the rake, I'm guessing?
The corn rake only has 4 tines.
Oh, my God.
So, big uh-oh here. The ME contacted the state forensic pathologist and requested that she perform an autopsy of Amy's remains. The forensic pathologist determined that the damage to Amy's left hand could be defensive wounds that would be consistent with a struggle, and that she could have blunt force trauma to her chin, cheek, and ear. The pathologist found that the corn rake penetrated through Amy's back deep enough to rupture her breast implant and exit her front side, as well as puncture her lung and liver.
Wow, so it went really in there.
It's really deep.
Okay.
Her manner of death was classified as a homicide. The Delaware County Sheriff's Office doesn't investigate many homicides. In fact, Amy's was only the 4th in the last 10 years.
Well, you said it's a real small town.
Yeah.
So.
So, luckily, they did ask for help from Iowa's Division of Criminal Investigation. Todd was interviewed on the day of Amy's death, and he said he didn't know how she got injured. They had been working in the North Hog building that day.
Okay, and you said it wasn't that far away, right?
Correct. It's not too far.
So, like, if she were to be screaming, they probably would have heard her, right?
It was 30 yards away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, someone screaming, you're going to probably hear that.
I mean, you would think so.
I mean, he heard the kids screaming.
Well, yes. And he was not standing very far. And he was outside of the building when his son was screaming.
Okay.
So I don't know if somehow it could get muffled if she's in a shed. I'm not sure.
I mean, I know, like, and like wind can carry,
yeah,
you know, voices. I was just curious how far away, because I'm just like piecing things together. Sorry.
No, you're fine. They have several buildings on, or they have several other buildings on the land, including a second hog building, the Mullis's home, a red shed, and a large outbuilding that they called the shop. Investigators asked about the positioning of the four-tine corn rake in her back, and he said that he did not think all of the tines were in her back when he removed the rake. His son Tristan was interviewed, and he told the police that he had been with his father working in the hog barn when Amy was injured. His father never left his side that day. Todd said that he and Amy were very open with each other, and he was loving, kind, and comforting towards her. When something came up in their marriage, they were able to talk about it right away. On November 12th, they did Amy's autopsy. The state medical examiner's office stated that the injuries were not consistent with falling on the corn rake. The rake only had four tines, but Amy had six puncture wounds, and four of the six were at a downward angle. So if Todd was correct that she fell on the rake, you would also need to believe that she fell, got up, removed the rake from her body, and fell on the rake again in a different direction.
I mean, that would be really some bad luck.
It would be, yeah, horrifying if that's what happened. On November 16th, Todd was interviewed again, and he said that around 2013, Amy had an affair with another man. His son learned about the affair, and that's when Todd and his son got closer. They basically found a way to bond over her infidelity, which, like, I'm happy that a father and son are growing closer, but that's also kind of a weird thing to bond over.
It is.
Todd said that he was devastated by the affair, and it shattered his trust in Amy. Investigators asked if he ever confronted Amy about another affair, and he said no.
Yes.
But investigators already knew that it was a yes. They knew about that second affair.
Well, and did he fucking think they weren't going to hear about it? I mean, the rumors spread so fast in that town anyways.
Right. They were swirling. I mean, come on. Well, they had already talked to Jerry, and he was like, yeah, we had an affair.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it.
Yeah. Jerry said that on the day of her death, he was at home in Anamosa, which is 45 minutes from the farm, and coincidentally, his son was his alibi.
Okay.
He got up early that morning and did some work at his own place with his son. Then the two of them watched college football. Jerry's cell phone activity was all in Anamosa, so they turned their attention back to Todd, especially because they knew now that Amy wanted a divorce. Agent Turbett specifically asked Todd who Jerry Frazier was, and he said they knew each other through work, and he did not mention any suspicions of an affair.
It's actually really weird.
It's so bizarre to me.
Why are you hiding it at this point?
Right. And like, why on earth would this be anything that you have to cover up? That makes right. no sense.
What's the significance in your head that makes you want to cover it up?
Because obviously you had these suspicions. You did confront her. I don't get it. But it's almost like he's trying to paint a picture of such like a good, better solid marriage.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I think. He was also asked how Amy and Jerry knew each other. And he said same thing. They had a business relationship. Agent Turbett stepped out of the room briefly to get some water. And when he came back in and, you know, Todd had time to think about things, he was like, actually, I did have a few concerns about Amy and Jerry. He said that in July of 2018, he saw a large number of text messages between the two on their phone bill. But they both denied being in a relationship when he confronted them. So that was it. Investigators asked Todd to describe his marriage, and he said it was a very tight relationship, and the communication between them was great. They were always happy. He said at the time of her death, their relationship was good, and they didn't argue or fight. This isn't the exact picture that everybody else was painting, though.
Well, and it's, I don't know a single marriage that people do not have some sort of argument or fighting in.
There's always something.
Yeah, I just don't understand why. Again, it's probably trying to paint this picture, but it's just like, dude.
I mean, that's suspicious.
It is.
If you say, like, I'm never fighting, we have amazing communication. Like, everyone has a bad day.
Yeah.
Everyone does irritating shit.
Dude, me and Isaac are freaking amazing at working through things, but some days he really pisses me off. And I know I really piss him off, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just like, why are it's dumb. It's really weird to continuously try to paint this beautiful picture of the perfect marriage.
It's an interesting choice.
It
and
is.
Especially when they're like questioning over and over about this same topic,
right.
I would start to think, do they know something? Because it sounds like
it
maybe.
Sure does. And you if know? You're lying about that, what else are you lying about?
Right. Because they keep leading you back to this marriage situation. On the Monday prior to Amy's death, which was November 5th, Jerry said that Amy had confided in him and said that she wanted to leave Todd, but she was scared and said, quote, if he catches me, he might make me disappear. After the two of them had been confronted by Todd in July, Amy told him several days later that Todd was now reviewing her cell phone usage and it was no longer safe for them to communicate via text message. Jerry said that he did fear for his own safety at this point.
Well, then why are you doing it?
Well, he did initially, like, say, after he was confronted, like, hey, maybe we should tone things down. And
yeah, but then they didn't.
They didn't. They didn't.
So it's like, he still put himself in the position.
Yes, he did. The investigators learned that Todd hadn't slept in the same bed as Amy for the 5 months prior to her death, and they were not getting along, like he said. Amy sent a text to a friend several months prior where she commented on things being very tense at their house. She sent another message to that same friend at 11 a.m., 8:11 a.m. on the morning of her death, saying, still very tense around here, just not sure of anything anymore. After interviewing friends and family members, investigators learned that Amy and Todd had been having marital problems for several years. Amy made statements to her close friends through texts, calls, and in person that she felt Todd would kill her if he found out about the affair or wanting a divorce. They also learned that Todd contacted a few friends and relatives to talk about his relationship with Amy and all of his frustrations with her.
That's such a hard thing to say, though, like, on her part, because, like, when you're saying, like, he's gonna kill me, like, how many times do you say that, like, about people? You know, it's especially if, like, you're in that situation. Like, if I were the person in that situation, like, I just feel like I would be like, oh, he's gonna kill me.
I think, yeah.
So it's hard to, like, determine if she was like, no, he's gonna fucking kill me.
Yeah, I see your point. And it is. It's a phrase, like, when you know someone's gonna be mad, oh my God, they're gonna kill me, you know? And
yeah,
a lot of times you don't mean it in the literal sense. And so I think that there are times, though, where you might have to be like, hey, do you mean for real?
Right. That's what,
like,
I'm saying.
Let's check in with each other here.
Yeah.
But also, as you'll find out later, she does get more specific about it, too.
Okay.
And that, to me, is where I'd be like, red flag, red flag. Like,
yes,
something's going on here.
That's where I'm...
Like,
that's
this
exactly
isn't just a phrase.
That. Yeah, that's where I was going with that. Okay.
Yeah. One of Amy's friends that she was close with for over 12 years said that when she went to the local Walmart, Todd required her to document and notify him when she went there and when she returned. If Amy and her friends had lunch together, Todd would send messages to Amy asking what time she left and what time she'd be coming back. Like, everything had to be down to the T of what time she was going to be back home. Terry said that in the months leading up to her death, Amy was discussing leaving Todd, and she felt like she was so trapped. She was a prisoner at home. Near the end of August of 2018, Terry and Amy spoke on the phone, and Amy tells her friend that she feared Todd would kill her. And she said that if she went missing, Terry should instruct people to look for her body in a wooded area that they recently purchased.
Okay, there's the red flag.
This is very, very specific information here. She also said if she was found dead, quote, "You'll know Todd did something to me."
Yeah, that's a big red flag too.
Yes. This is getting very real here. Now, investigators spoke to another friend who stated that prior to her death, Amy told them that Todd would kill her and throw her to the pigs if he found out about the affair.
Oh, I had to. I knew the pigs were going to come into it somehow.
You did. Now, the friend also stated that Amy was given a nickname and they called her Potwife, which meant prisoner of Todd.
Oh, that's fucked up.
So, I mean, it is very fucked up. Like, that's not a cute, funny nickname. I don't like it.
If you're saying that, like, you should be helping her get the fuck out then.
Right. Clearly something is going on here. Another friend of Amy's said that Amy told her she was very unhappy in her marriage to Todd and she talked about leaving him. This friend had concerns and asked Amy if she felt safe and did offer to help her leave Todd and get to a safe place. So that's a good friend. Another close friend said that she and Amy would text and call each other on a consistent basis. The friend said that Amy had a very serious talk with her and said that she was very afraid of Todd and that he was going to kill her if she left him and if he found out about the affair. The friend said that the conversation was very emotional for both of them. So you can see this isn't just something she's saying like, God, he's going to kill me.
Yep.
This is very real. She genuinely believes it. She's saying it to everybody. Investigators spoke to a friend of both Todd and Amy. They stated that they were friends with Amy for 3 to 4 years, and then they had become close in the year leading up to her death. The friend had known Todd their whole life. The friend said that one morning, they contacted Amy, and she was screaming and crying, and she told them that Todd found out about the affair, and her child was crying and refused to get on the bus because he did not know if Amy would still be there when he got home.
Wow.
So now we know there's fighting. He did know about the affair. And now their child is being brought into this. The friend said that the conversation happened on October 22nd of 2018. And Amy was very upset and yelling when they were talking. Another mutual friend of both Amy and Todd were interviewed and stated that after Amy's murder, Todd went to their home and during a conversation, he said, quote, "You really have to watch what you text on your phone because it could come back to bite you." He also said, quote, "You have to be careful of what you put on your cell phone." The friend asked Todd, "What do you mean by that, buddy old pal?" And he said, quote, "Oh, well, you know, if you write something like, I wish you were dead, or it would be so easy to have you killed or have you dead." Todd told the friend that a person should be careful about telling someone how easy it is to push them off of a cliff while walking together. And he told this friend that law enforcement had seized his phone.
Did you see how big my eyes were through all of that?
I thought they might pop out of your face.
Oh, my God.
To be honest. So if that's
red flag,
true,
red flag, red flag, red flag.
They're just popping up everywhere here. Deputy Travis Hemesath looked at the red shed, and he found a couple drops of blood on the floor, and he was not able to find blood markings on any other equipment or any indication that she had fallen where her body had been discovered. Blood drops should have been on the equipment that was surrounding her.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go with the blood drops again.
It's always, always the blood drops.
It is.
The Mullis's son, Tristan, later admitted that at some point, he might have lost sight of his dad while they were working on the farm that day.
Oh, God.
Maybe they weren't side by side in the hog barn the entire time.
That's so hard, though, because, like, you can really accidentally convince yourself to, you know,
and you want to protect your father.
Well, and the longer you, like, think about it, the more you can start being like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Could he have gone for even a second? Maybe, you know. He said that he went to get water from the office at the front of the barn, so he wouldn't have had eyes on his dad at that time. In his interview, he estimated that he was gone less than a minute each time that he went to get that water. But during the trial, he said he didn't know how long he was actually away from his dad, but he never saw blood on him, and his demeanor never changed while they worked together. That is actually where we're going to end. I know.
Ugh, fine. Whatever.
So,
piss me off.
Yeah. I always like to do that. You know. Next week, the trial begins. There's going to be some interesting Google searches that were discovered on Todd's iPad.
Oh, good.
There were cameras on the farm that were not working the day of Amy's death.
I love how cameras just conveniently always do that.
It's always. It's so weird that cameras always turn off when there's a death.
Yep.
We're going to discuss Amy's wounds more in depth. And
ooh, I'm real curious about that one.
And we are going to hear pieces of the 911 call.
Oh, yes, you know I love when we get to hear pieces of it.
Yeah.
You know I love when we get to hear any of it. That just, it makes it stick.
And I won't play 911 calls in most of the things that we do. However, there is some very compelling things happening in this one.
Okay.
So we definitely want to hear it.
Okay.
So come back next week because we have so much more.
Well, I can tell you I'll be here.
You will. I will make sure of it. All right. So make sure to follow us on any of your podcast apps. Tell us the stories you want to hear. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Leave us a 5-star review if you love us. Tell your friends. Tell your cats. Bye.